to another episode of the Gaming Moguls Podcast, the only podcast that swept the gold medals in the roll and move category. I'm your host for this evening, Mark Teske, along with my co-host, Sobi Youssef. Sobi, how's it going tonight? You watching the Olympics at all?
I am hearing about the Olympics, Mark, but no, I haven't actively been watching. I did see some cool tricks. I guess that's what you call them when they do the flips and stuff on the YouTube.
I am waiting for the deck building event and the dexterity event to come.
You might be waiting a long time.
And for those of you that just noticed, we have a third voice with us tonight. Nick.
Hey everyone.
Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show, Mark and Sobi. Great to be here. My name's Nick, and I'm with a board game content creation group called Talking Cardboard, located here in the Twin Cities as well. And we mostly do YouTube videos, but have also been dabbling with some TikToks and have an X. And I'm trying to learn here from Mark how to do a good podcast since I've been dabbling with that. And but I don't really know what I'm doing. So glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, step one, have a face for radio.
Hey, I got that chip box checked off. So
yeah, that's one of the big reasons I'm like, I would actually do a YouTube channel, but that means I'd have to clean stuff and myself and everything else. So
yeah, it would be pretty cool to do, like, you know, playthroughs and things like that. But man, that is a lot.
Oh, I know. And I'm crazily obsessive about too, like, you know, I did 10 years in the AV world, so like I'm super obsessive about video quality and lighting quality and audio quality. And so it would go off the rails really, really quickly.
Yeah. That said, I have seen some of Nick's videos and I think your production is great. And, you know, definitely recommend people checking you out. What kind of content are you guys covering typically, Nick?
So generally we do relatively brief reviews of games. I have been trying to do more of like unboxing, live unboxings, and then playthroughs, limited playthroughs typically of games. The content output for me specifically has decreased a little bit over the last few months due to having a 13-month-old. So I'm learning how to, you know, manage that along with trying to make some new videos. But we're also, you know, trying to connect with publishers as well. Just the other day, we were doing a video for this new game called Ascension Legends from Stoneblade Entertainment, and it's on GameFound right now. So plug in that for Stoneblade here too. But yeah, so trying to do a little bit of everything, I guess.
Awesome. Sure. Well, also, you know, thanks a ton, Nick, for helping us organize some of the publishing contacts for the con. So, you know, we're definitely looking forward to some of the surprises we have upcoming here. And, you know, we're definitely looking at, of course, providing refreshment and some, you know, potentially a pizza party. Woohoo, right? But also we have, you know, possibly some door prizes as well. So things are looking up from the publisher donation perspective there.
And, you know, not to completely bury it, we're actually talking about MogulsCon 2, which we're, now coming in within 2 weeks of. So coming up fast, MogulsCon 2 is going to be August 16th through 18th in Hopkins, Minnesota. And we're all quite excited about it, excited enough about it that tonight's episode is actually going to be us talking about the games that we're excited to play at MogulsCon. So normally we would do our typical format where we would, whenever we would guest on, we typically have you do your Cinderella game night where you pick three games that you want to introduce to people that represent your gaming habits. We're going to have you on some other time and do that because that's a lot of fun. But tonight specifically, we're going to talk only about games that we're excited about trying to fit in the 3 day stretch that is Summer Muster. Now, recognizing this is like approximately 34 hours of available time. You know, if you were there from start to finish every single day, there's about 34 hours of gaming. So, you know, whatever we say tonight, we're going to do about a quarter of. So the way we're going to do this is we're going to walk around the table, kind of rapid fire, list a game, why we're excited about playing it. And also, you know, whether you think you'll actually play it or not, that kind of thing. And we'll just keep passing the talking stick till our lists run out. Sound fun?
Sounds good.
Let's do it.
Amen. Nick, as our guest, please show us the way.
All right.
Kick this mess off.
I'm going to start this off then with Memoir 44, the Overlord version of the game, which means it's actually an 8-player game of cool. Memoir 44.
Uh-huh.
And it's difficult to usually organize because you need 8 players to truly play the Overlord scenarios, because you have one player on each side as like the commander, and then you have 3 field generals, and the commander is handing out cards to the field generals, and then the field general, without any kind of communication, has to use that card however they best see fit for their section of the battlefield. So it's got this really cool thematic element that you don't get in a regular game of Memoir 44. Excited to try to get it at the table at MogulsCon, because there's going to be a lot of gamers in one confined area. So I'm hoping I might be able to convince a few other guys to play it. It's also, Memoir 44, the game system's relatively light. So compared to other tactical war games. And, but yeah, likelihood to actually get it to the table at MogulsCon, low, but excitement and anticipation to hopefully play it is very high. That's Memoir 44, Overlord.
So 2 things on that. Number one, if you need a second copy of Memoir 44, I can hook you up on a second one. And second off, my son loved to be part of that too, because his old man won't play Memoir 44 with him, and he would think that was super cool, and he's got it there. So I think you got a second already. Sobi, what's on your list first?
All right, I'm going to start off with a game that you have absolutely zero interest in playing, Mark. And this is 1817, published by All Aboard Games, designed by Craig Bartel and Tim Flowers. So I think many listeners that follow 18XX are familiar with this game. But, you know, as some of you may be aware, 1817 is before railroads really took off in America. So it's really all about railroad development. The real key hook to 1817 is that it includes a shorting and loan system. So this is totally different from many 18XX games. There's a lot of, I guess, mental gymnastics that you have to run through to pull some of these levers while you're shorting your opponent's stocks and taking out loans with your own stocks to, you know, run your company as well. So love this game. First couple times I've played, it's been a blast, and I think it would be great to table this again, although the game does take between 8 and 12 hours. So not sure if realistically we'll get all the way through, but we'll see. Mark, do you have any 18XX on your list?
I do. I was hoping to talk about those later, but why not? We'll get right into it and get those out of the way first. By the way, those of you that are listening to this that aren't into 18XX, this will be like one corner of things, right? Don't get scared. Don't freak out. It'll be mostly not drains. Some 18XX games are like working for the Fed, like Sobi's game is talking about. Other ones are like playing with your choo-choo trains in the corner. And I picked a very playing with choo-choo trains game. I want to play 18 India while I'm there for a couple of reasons. Number one is it's a big map. It's kind of epic in scope. It's very much an operational game. It's very much, you know, hey, I'm playing with trains and I'm making this really cool train thing and I'm trying to make money. It's also got a very unique and interesting stock system in it that's kind of unique to its own little branch. And I'm also interested in it because Michael Carter, the designer of it, will actually be in attendance there. And I'm sure he will be interested in leading a table full of 18 India at some point there as well. So you get a chance to not only play it, you get a chance to play it with the designer at some times. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the game is. If you're playing with the designer, you learn things about it and you find interest in it that you might not have otherwise. So that's my first pick of the night, 18 India.
That's a good point. I totally spaced that Mike will be there, and I might have to join that table as well, Mark.
Just having Mike there makes it fun, even if it's maybe not your style of 18XX game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my next game is another World War II tactical fighting game, but this one's Tide of Iron, and this was originally published by Fantasy Flight like 20 years ago. And some of you may be surprised that Fantasy Flight published a World War II game, and unfortunately they stopped supporting it not too long after it was originally published, but it to this day is still one of my favorite games in general, let alone war games. The system's a little more complicated than Memoir 44, still a dice chucker, but it's you know, the type of game that I guess appeals to me. You have more flavorful scenarios and objectives than you would in Memoir 44, so it has just a little more, feels a little more of like a real war game compared to Memoir 44. But you know, hex combat, hex board, and you know, move and shoot style, yeah, tactical combat game. And I think this game might be a little easier to get to the table since you don't need eight players. You can play it 1v1. I do think a 2v2 game would be fun. That's Tide of Iron, and yeah, looking forward to hopefully trying that at MogulsCon.
Awesome, Nick, and it's good to hear some of this war game content coming from you. I know that we kind of met through gaming at the first Minnesota events, and have been doing some of those lately with Europa Universalis. So it's good to see you bringing some of those games.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, absolutely. So my next one here is going to be Pax Penning. I'm going to skip the 18XX. For now, maybe sprinkle it in over the next few, but we're going to go with Pax Penning. This is by Matilda Simonson. Actually came out this year, so it's self-published. And, you know, Matilda actually handmade many of these kits and sent them out to her customers. So it's pretty incredible little production here. It comes in a little rucksack, and it's made of cloth and comes with some like gems, and it's pretty amazing. So excited to show it to you guys. So this is kind of a distilled PAX game that Matilda released this year. Basically, you are small kings, local chieftains, and wealthy peasants that have been invited by the first Christian king of Sweden to participate in his nation building. And it's really supposed to be a thematic historical game on this Viking age. So it says PAX in the title. So there is a little bit of PAX influence. I wouldn't say it's your typical PAX, but it's adjacent and definitely a game that me and several others want to play.
Oh, that's cool. I have not heard that one at all, so I'm anxious to see that one. I'm actually going to kind of pile onto that open market style game. One of the themes I've got going, when I thought about games I want to play at a convention, it's ones that tend to have higher player count and have a lot of interactivity, maybe a little bit lower rules, and maybe a little bit livelier, so you know, some sort of auctions or social interaction. So I am going to run a session of Millennium Blades at MogulsCon.
Awesome.
So Millennium Blades, the riff on trading card games, is just real-time madness, right? You're trading cards, you're trying to build a deck, you're going to play a game out of a tournament out of that deck, and then you're going to try to build collections and trade them with other people to try to improve the quality of your collection. I don't get a chance to play this much. There's a fair amount of setup and teardown to it. You know, it's a game that everybody talks about, like, man, that's a fun game. It's really wacky. And like, I never get a chance to play it. So that seems like an awesome opportunity to set up and play Millennium Blade. So that's on my short list of stuff to bring out and introduce a new crowd of people to.
I might have to jump in on a game of that then, Mark, because I've heard about that game years ago when it, I think, came out. Have yet to ever play it, but the concept sounded really intriguing to me because it's like a game within a game, right? Sounds like so.
Yep.
Anyway,
extremely meta.
So the next game on my list is Dominant Species by GMT Games. And this one I'm excited about because I remember hearing about it for the first time, I want to say almost 10 years ago for myself, at least maybe longer, and thinking, oh, that's cool. It looks like kind of like an area control, you know, a biology game. And have always been, you know, looking, kind of semi-looking for it whenever I'm at like a board game market for a good price, because I know it's, you know, it's been in circulation now for a while, but I've never actually purchased a copy of it. However, I noticed someone's trying to organize a game already at MogulsCon, so as of now, I already signed up to play it, and therefore, my probability of actually playing this one compared to some of the other games on my list that I mentioned is high for that reason. And yeah, I'm excited to, you know, see what Dominant Species is all about. I never really watched a lot of videos about the game, but just looked appealing from what little I have seen about it over the years. And it seems to have stood the test of time, so it must be pretty good.
One quick pro tip on that one. There is a very fiddly recalculation of who has dominance in each area that tends to eat up a lot of time. We dispensed with all that. It actually says in the rule book that you have to claim dominance And they don't really say how you have to go about claiming dominance. So, you know, barring, you know, bare-chested combat or urinating on the other fella, you know, we've just sort of made it that if you don't take, it's kind of like Muggins and cribbage, that if you don't take it, you lose it. We're not going to go and recalculate and go, oh, you should have had dominance there. It's like, oh, tough bananas. You didn't claim it. You had dominance and you didn't take advantage of it. So anyway, that makes it a little edgier, a little more sharp elbows version of the game if people have to take it or lose it.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like, reminds me of Kings in the Corner, the card game. If you like miss a play and the next player kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever remember Kings in the Corner, but you know, it's like a courtesy. Anyway.
Yeah. Same general idea. So that's my pro tip. Otherwise, you're going to spend an hour recalculating dominance. People are responsible for their own dominance.
Got it.
Yeah, DS is always a blast. I've never had a bad time playing it, but I've definitely had a, I guess, feel bad time. It could be quite mean.
It can be quite swingy too.
Yeah, yeah. I think the end game, it can be pretty AP inducing and wild. So that can be a challenge, but you know, with basically, especially with like the birds, right, where they all converge at the end and are moving around a ton. So anyway, that, I think you have a full table there, and that's up, that's like six player now, right, Nick?
I was number six on the list, so as of, yeah, that's my understanding.
Nice. That'll be a good one. So next on my list, I'm going to talk about just cube rails at large. I don't want to talk about each individual title because these are short games and we're probably going to play a lot of them. But just to name a few, I'm interested in Iberian Railways, probably Southern Rails. We'll see if Stevenson's Rocket can table by Kenizia, that I did buy from Jake a while back and still haven't tabled it.
He'll play it with you.
Yeah. Mini Rails, I know that'll be a quick one. Loco Works, I found a nice cost-effective local copy recently. And then I know you want to play this, Mark, is Chicago Northwestern.
Well, I'll just take that as a handoff, and I'll go right into that as my next item on my list. Chicago and Northwestern.
Awesome.
The John Moore Cube Rails game. I have a little I don't even honestly know if it's a good game or not. I've heard some rumors it might be fatally broken. Part of me doesn't care because, little background, my dad is a card-carrying foamer. He's so into trains, it's not even funny. That's the, total train nerd thing. So I spent my entire life chasing trains. Whenever one went by, we had to get in the car and go chase it and take pictures of it. And the railroad that went through Waseca, Minnesota was the Chicago Northwestern, both from the east and west and the north-south. So I could see two different train lines virtually from my house, and it was always the green and yellow engines of the Chicago Northwestern. So soft spot in my heart for the CNNW, and just that alone makes me want to play it. I have no other reason than that.
I appreciate
that
story.
Good enough reason.
I like the story, Mark, because I on TikTok will get this one. I don't know how the algorithms work, but there's this one TikToker who does TikToks about trains passing by, and I was like, oh, I guess that's a hobby, that there's people out there in the world that literally chase down trains and just to look at them. And I guess that was like your dad. So there's definitely a hobby out there for that. Next on my list is going back to the war games that I started with, and that's War Room. And this is by the same designer of Axis and Allies. So for a simple description, think Axis and Allies. But I feel this is a great kind of convention style game because you do, I think, ideally want a full five player count. I think it technically even goes up to six, but Alan from the first Minnesota group said that it's really best for five, because then I think that China can, or Italy is a boring faction to play by itself, I guess. So you'd have Germany and Japan and Italy as two players, and then the US, UK, and then Russia, Soviet Union as the other three. And what makes this kind of unique compared to Axis and Allies is the movement in the game is all simultaneous. So everyone is, plotting out their moves or their turns secretly amongst their team. So like as a team, the allies get together and determine who's going to move what where. And then of course the Axis team does the same. There's this bidding. Then there is a bidding part of the game where everyone is bidding their oil resource for initiative within the round. And then after that, everyone flips, shows their orders, and then you go through the initiative and everyone resolves their orders. And of course, sometimes unexpected things happen, strategies fall apart, and it's just, I think, a really thematic game. The combat follows the same kind of general procedure for the most part as Axis and Allies. But anyway, might get this to the table at MogulsCon. We'll see. I think if you wanted to do a full true game, it's like 10 hours probably. And I don't know if that's going to be feasible or not. But regardless, something that I think Alan mentioned he would be interested in playing. So that would be two people out of the necessary five. So we'll see if that happens. But that's War Room by the same designer as Axis and Allies. I'm blanking on the publishing company that he has for War Room.
It's Larry Harris, I believe, right?
Yes, Larry Harris is the designer. And I don't know if his company is also like Larry Harris. Or I think it's like Night Games, Nightingale or something like that. Anyway, I know Sobe backed the Imperial game that's coming up.
The Napoleonics game, Imperial Borders. Yeah. This one looks great. Looks like a perfect con game. Beautiful production. I mean, it's got the whole like top down, you know, from the North Pole strategic view, which like makes you really feel like you're a armchair, tactician here. So, and also you got like the sticks for pushing like the pieces, right? Oh man, this is like totally like the nerdiest thing. So.
Okay. That is pretty cool. I've always said, if you are going to get me to play a war game, World War II theme is what'll do it, because I am just a huge World War II nerd. So
yeah, maybe you should get you and your son to try and give it a try.
I would play Overlord first and Memoir 44, but who knows?
Nice. I am going to switch gears here and talk about a war game, and I think Nick might actually be interested in tabling this as well. This is Enemy Action Kharkov. Published by Compass Games, designed by Richard Butterfield. And this came out, I want to say, 2 years ago now, and it's in the Enemy Action series, which now has two games in it. The first game in the series was Enemy Action Ardennes, about the Battle of the Bulge. So Kharkov is conversely about one of the Eastern Front famous conflicts here in the Kharkov region. And basically, it has similar mechanisms, and I'm excited to table it because I hear it's got quite the, you know, different tactics around the game. So Butterfield created this system, which uses classic hex and counter war game mechanisms, but also a super innovative card mechanism where basically you are activating your troops using the cards in your hand, and some of them will go back into your discard pile to be drawn again the next round. Some of them will have to hold for an entire turn before you get to access them again. So you have to time which troops that you're activating. And then some of these cards you're using as battle abilities as well, that guess what? They don't cause like dice roll benefits or dice roll modifiers. There are no dice in the game. So super strange for a war game. You're pulling all these chits out of a cup and you're playing cards, but also pushing hexes. So super excited to try to table that one.
Yeah, I was wondering how you could be interested in a hex encounter war game, because generally there's dice involved. And I know you're not a big fan of dice combat, and that explains why you are interested in Enemy Action Kharkov. And for me, my interest is because I do own Ardennes, as Sobe mentioned, is the first game in the series. And I got that one more to play solitaire because there is a in-depth solo playbook for both. Somehow there's two rule books to play solo, I think, for each side, which sounds ridiculous. But I just confirmed this to myself that Butterfield is also the designer of D-Day at Omaha Beach. And he has tons of D-Day games in that series, but I also own D-Day at Omaha Beach, and that has a very innovative solitaire system, hex-based combat. Also, I think no dice. I want to say it also is just card-driven as well, and a very unique system where each hex has like a bunch of little duller colored dots and symbols on them, which represent the line of sight for all the German positions, which is ridiculous to have every single hex basically filled in for which other hexes have line of sight to it, but a really innovative solitaire system. So knowing that, I imagine Enemy Action is a good good game too. So yeah, I would be very excited to try to table that with Sobi at the MogulsCon.
Yeah, totally. Butterfield is a genius designer.
Okay.
And yeah. I think almost everything he touches is pretty awesome. So he actually co-designed or finished, I guess you could say, Downfall of the Third Reich, which is a GMT release that originally was designed by Chad Jensen, who passed away recently. And basically the concept there is that, you know, it's a two-player game where each side plays Western Front, Eastern Front, but then they kind of split up Germany in the middle. So that game will be tabled, it looks like. I see Doug DeMoss and one other person, I believe maybe Kevin, were interested in getting Downfall to the table. So that should be there.
I am also going to pick a game where you get to LARP as a German.
Hopefully in a better way, I guess.
Well, it depends. Is modern politics better? Your choice.
Okay. Sure.
So I've heard a lot of interest in the Minneapolis community about people that want to learn how to play Board Game Geek game number one, also known as Die Macher, a game about German politics and the German parliamentary system. Wow, does that sound dry? But you realize it's crazily satirical of even our modern day political routine, where you spend a lot of money to influence people to buy votes, and you send out shadow agents to influence, and you buy up media so that people vote your way, and all of those things. And basically,
Mark, you got to stop this here. You're not allowed to say that on the internet.
I mean, in a hypothetical fantasy world that I have created in my own brain on the spot right now, that's how politics works. Who, me, cynical? No. it's a fantastic game. It's a game that weirdly contracts and gets faster as the game goes on, unlike most games that expand out and get bigger and slower and grind down, and you know, the last rounds are super AP. This one, the first round is the most AP, and the board gets smaller and smaller and smaller. It contracts so that by the time you're at round four, you had better have all your stuff in place. Otherwise you're not going to do well. The only thing that's a little different here is I have always played the smaller version of that, the four election game. I want to play the full seven election game this time around, because I'm really interested to see how that all plays out. And I think we have the time and interest. Plays five. So once again, a game that I don't think I'll have any trouble filling up a table for. So that is Die Macher, an old classic. And by the way, we're playing the new game, people. I get it. The old game's better and it's deeper and it's nastier and blah, 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 blah. I don't own it and I don't have time to learn it before then. So you get to learn what I'm going to teach.
All right. So next for me is I'd classify it as a war game, and that's Dune, the strategy game. And this is a very hot take. Please understand, everyone listening, that this is not the opinion of the gaming moguls. It's of my own personal opinion, but I believe Dune strategy, the game, is like the real Dune game, not this Dune Imperium game that everyone's been crazy about over the last few years. I really am not a huge Dune nerd. I have never read the books. I honestly would also probably say I'd rather watch the original movies than the newer ones. So I'm probably canceled now for saying both of those things. But all of that said, the Dune strategy game, I think, is also another great con game, because I know it has a long play time. I've yet to play it. I own the Gale Force 9 version, which I believe is pretty similar to the original publisher's version from like the 80s. And I'm forgetting who published it originally. And now since they've done an even revised version of it further, but I watched some videos about it. I think the idea of all these asymmetric factions is extremely interesting. They all play very different. And that's what really draws me to I'm not a huge competitive gamer, but if I feel like I'm doing something that's completely different than all the other players in the game, then I just feel like it's not as competitive as it is. Like, I'm trying to learn my own little system. And even though we're all playing against each other, I can convince myself that I'm really just playing against myself. And anyway, looks like a really cool game. There's a lot of interest when I put it out there in the Board Game Geek forum for games to play. We'll see if everyone has enough time available for Dune compared to all the other commitments, but I'd like to think this might actually get played at MogulsCon. So that's Dune, the strategy game, whatever the full name of that is.
Dune the original. Here's my hot take. Read the book and then realize what a shabby ripoff Star Wars actually is.
Was it okay? I haven't read the book, so I can't.
1,000%. Yeah.
Interesting.
Star Wars is a really cheap ripoff of Dune.
Interesting.
So just a quick follow up. I think that your perspective here, Nick, is legit. I know a lot of people in First Minnesota totally agree with you. A very popular game at the club. I love Dune Imperium, though. I gotta say, I think it's one of the coolest games released in the past 5 years. I guess 5 years, maybe. I don't know. I'm feeling old now. Hopefully it's within the past 5 years. But I will disagree with you, but I think that, you know, very legit take. So
thank you. Thank you for legitimizing my opinion, Toby.
Okay, so I'm going to jump into my next game here. And this is one that came out a few years back now. It's probably my game of the year at the time, is Heat Pedal to the Metal. And I absolutely adore this game. So Heat is, it's by Days of Wonder, and it's by the same designers as, what is that? That biking game, right? Peloton or,
Lantern Rouge?
Flamme Rouge. Yeah. So, and actually these guys are the same designers as 13 Days, the Cuban Missile Crisis. I just, you know, we were talking about this last week, Mark, about like reviewing our collection with the BGG data, right? Mm-hmm. And cross-referencing our favorite designers. And apparently the designers of this game also did Jolly Roger Games' 13 Days, the Cuban Missile Crisis. So that was a little shocking to me.
Super random.
Yeah. So anyway, Heat Pedal to the Metal is a blast. It is a masterclass in simplified design. It's a hand management game. It's a race. It's really stressful. It really gives you the feel of racing and car racing, shifting your gears. I mean, geez, the whole game, like from an industrial design perspective all the way through the end, just a blast. So I'd love to get a big match of Heat in if possible.
I will see your car racing and raise you some dice chucking, because the next item on my list is what I'm calling Formula Jackpot. No, there's no game out there called Formula Jackpot. I've always hypothesized that Formula Day is going to be a much better game if everybody's got $10 in the pot and it's winner take all, because then you actually care about spinning out on the corners. You care about winning. And, you know, it's one of those where there's actually a kitty to win by doing it. Of course, I'm assuming this is going to be kind of a late night, end of the night, sort of everybody gathered around and cheering when somebody goes off into the wall and loses their chance at the $100 that's going to be in the pot. So I don't know, you know, officially, I think we're playing for credits or points. Those credits or points might look an awful lot like dollar bills, but don't tell anybody.
The gaming moguls does not condone gambling in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's merely just putting a little skin in the game. So I actually have always wanted to try that. And this may be the form for that. Maybe it won't be. We'll have to read the room. But I would love to try it where there's actually some consequences around winning or losing in Formula Day. Because do I think it's the greatest game ever? No, it's clearly not. But, you know, people just tend to go for it. And they, oh, well, I hit the wall and crashed. Oh, well. But if there's like real money on the line, now suddenly you're like, oh, geez, I don't think I should roll the big dice. It's sort of like why playing poker sucks if you don't have any money on the line. It's very much like that. So anyway, Formula Day with a wager on the line. That's something else I'd like to try.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of if I played Formula Day or a different racing game where you're betting on cars. You don't really have your own car. I mean, I'm not
Downforce.
Downforce. Okay. Sorry. I have not played Formula Day. I've played Downforce, but I was going to say I had played Heat and also thought that was a cool game. And I think when I played it, it was just myself and two or three others from the Talking Cardboard group. But I think playing a bigger game would be a lot of fun. So anyway, with that said, I will be talking about the game Men of Iron next. And this is another tactical war game that features, I'm going to say medieval combat. I don't know if that's the right historical term for the period of time. Perfect. That men. Okay, thank you, Sophie. And, you know, I'm a big, as you can guess from my first several games here, I'm kind of into war games, and I've always, you know, idolized medieval combat, but I don't really know if there's a lot of good tactical combat games that, in my opinion, really handle that very effectively from what I've seen in my lifetime, except what I've seen from Met of Iron. Just the visual appeal of seeing all the counters on the board lined up against each other immediately attracts me. And I've yet to actually play the game, but it's always been one of those games that I thought looked cool and picked up one of the copies of Men of Iron at Half Price Books the other week, and was thinking, oh, Moguls Con might be a great opportunity to try out the system for the first time. And I know it's a game that I think a lot of people solo and doesn't have solitaire rules. I'm usually very anti two-handing a game because I just don't like that idea of having to somehow do that cognitive gymnastics. Like, that should be another gymnastic event as cognitive. Never mind. Forget that joke. And anyway, so Men of Iron is the next game that I hopefully might be able to at least test out for a little bit at MogulsCon.
You might get a taker for that, for sure. I think so. I've played it before, and I know that Kevin Fetterly, who's going to be at the con, is into that system as well. So it's pretty fun. It's you know, who knows what medieval combat was actually like at a tactical level, but you know, it seems like they had like swords, and some people had sticks with pokers on them, and you know, some like metal things that they held up. So we'll see.
I know definitely the Scottish participated in some battles where they had pitchforks and the British had cannons.
There you go.
And it went about as you know, and it went like you anticipated.
I was gonna say no, they just rolled poorly and the pitchforks ended up winning. So that's that.
No, I think the battle was over in about 18 minutes.
They at least had 3-1 odds. That's for sure. That's a CRT joke, ladies and gentlemen.
<Pa-ching. All
right>. Okay. All right, Mark. That was a war game joke, just to clarify. Okay, so coming up next is, you know, keeping with the medieval theme, I'm gonna bring up Byzantium by Martin Wallace from the year 2005. So this is by Warfrog Games. It is an older Wallace game. I kind of went on this like Wallace buying binge, trying to find a bunch of his old stuff that looked interesting to me. This is one of the few that I actually kept out of the big lot that I had. And basically, what you're doing is trying to, let's see here. I'll read the description here. The Byzantine Empire is all that remains of what once was the mighty Roman Empire. She herself has only just survived a mighty war against Persia. Both empires now lay exhausted from their long years of struggle. So basically, you are playing both sides against the middle as you determine Constantinople's survival. So kind of a shared incentive game. You're, you know, playing one side and the other, and there's a bit of like a tug of war, and looks super interesting to me. I'd love to table this one.
Cool. Well, I'm gotta admit, I'm starting to feel a little left out here in the war game conversation. So maybe I'll participate at some minor level. This is a group rather than a game. It's not even a class of games. It is the Maximum Overdrive group. My friend Steve, who I went to high school with, he and his dad Don have a group called Maximum Overdrive. They run a room every year at Con of the North. And what they do is they set up these giant three-dimensional games that they've created that, you know, they've tried to make real. I mean, they made like a 6-foot-long Thunder Road game 5 years before they republished it, where they Mad Maxed out like 80 Matchbox cars and made their own version of it. They have this giant Colosseum that they bring in for this game called Whip the Beast. There's all these games you've never heard of, but they somehow make them really cool by making them 3D models of all these things. And like last time at MogulsCon, they showed up with two games, one of which was like a tank combat game of some sort with 3D terrain and tanks. And another one was, I don't know, I didn't play it, but it was a skirmish game of superheroes versus, you know, machine gun nests versus armor versus, I don't know. It was all over the place, but the people that played it had a good time. So regardless, the common theme is it's going to be very visually appealing and very interactive and very fun. Both Don and Steve are super nice guys, and I think there will be a bunch of people that'll really dig what they're bringing to play. So I'm looking forward to playing something with them. That's the Maximum Overdrive group. If you see giant terrain set up and a game you've never heard of, please say hello. They're a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I definitely would be interested in at least observing that, if not participating. At Con of the North, I probably did walk past that at Con of the North, or whatever they were doing at Con of the North. The one that I almost participated in was the Twin Cities Amera Thrash, is another board game group, and they do a huge 12-player version of Memoir 44. And yeah, I think any of those groups of people that put together these kind of grandiose custom design games of that are either original or based on designs of other games is a really cool thing. So that sounds awesome.
They do I probably won't play if it's Zombicide, but they actually bring 4-foot tall skyscrapers for Zombicide.
No way.
Marching down city streets and you don't know what's in each building. So you go up to the building and you open the door and they lift the building off and it's like, oh, look, there's 2 fatsos and 5 creepers in there or whatever, you know? And so anyway, it's just it even makes Zombicide fun.
I hope they do birthday parties, because my daughter, that's what she's getting for her birthday party, is the Maximum Overdrive. People are coming to our house and set up.
They probably would.
Are you sure that's not for your birthday, Nick?
We'll see. All right. Next for me is a game that actually only is on my list because I saw that it was posted on the thread for games people want to play, and that's called Wooden Ships and Iron Men. And again, I like tactical war games look cool to me, and I want to try them all. Obviously, I haven't played a lot of these, such as this Wooden Ships and Iron Men, but basically it's a tactical wooden a 1700 1800 era ship combat game. And I've always just thought that was really that type of genre or theme is really cool and appealing, and don't really have many board games in my collection specifically about that. I do have Blackbeard, actually, from Avalon Hill, which I guess could fall under that genre, but of course haven't played it yet. So anyway, Wooden Ships and Iron Men, it is Wooden Ships and Iron Men is the title of the game, and that just looks cool. And someone else posted it, so at least one person wants to play it at Mogul's Console. Maybe I'll get a game of that to the table, but just looks like a cool system. So
awesome. Next for me, I think every year we probably should make it a habit to play one of these, Mark. And this year, I really hope that we can get Inventions, Evolution of Ideas to the Table by Vital Lacerda, published by Eagle Griffin Games. So this is a little different from Lacerda's last game, which is Weather Machine, in that it is steeped in actual reality in some capacity, not magical weather things that just so happen to happen, I guess. No knock on that game by any means. It's just, I'm much more of a thematic, historical gamer. I loved Lisboa. I really felt that it was a thematic perspective on the rebuilding of Lisboa after its disasters at that time. So, with Inventions, I'm hoping for a more thematic perspective on innovation and ideas and civilization. So we'll see if that actually happens. In classic Lacerda fashion, this is going to be a Rube Goldberg machine. I'm not even going to begin to explain what this is going to be like. So you're gonna do stuff, and it's going to cause other stuff to happen, and 3 other currencies are going to change while you continue doing more things, and then you'll be surprised at what happens at the end. Mark?
Wow, what a great transition, because I have as my next item on the list Lacerda, but I don't know which one. But I have some opinions, right? I actually think that Vito Lacerda reached a certain point and he lost his freaking mind all of a sudden. Somewhere around on Mars, he just kind of lost his mind and got too complex and kind of jumped jumping the shark is a wrong word, because it's kind of the opposite of jumping the shark. It went too deep. So I was actually thinking more like classic old school Lacerda, back when they were still kind of approachable. And I had on my list some combination of the subset of Gallerist, Vinyos, Lisboa, or Kanban. I want to play one of those 4.
Yeah, all excellent. I wouldn't be opposed to either one of those. I think Vinyos was awesome. We had a really good time with that at the last muster. Kanban's a blast, classic. And, like I said, Lisboa is probably one of my top 10 games.
Yeah. So it's more the case on the I'm going to be busy hosting a lot of the weekend. So, you know, sitting down and learning and playing for 5 hours is probably more than I got available to me. Having said that, I would love to try Inventions, but for the purposes of the con, probably want to play one I already know.
Yeah, I get it. Hey, look, on Inventions, it says 60 to 150 minutes, Mark. So.
Right.
I looked up the game because I was curious about it, and I saw that too, and I was like, interesting.
Yeah, I don't think anyone believes this.
Yeah, that's egregious even by board game timing.
All right, next for me is another war game called Fields of Fire, and this is published by GMT, and it's a little bit of a cheat because it's actually really a solitaire game, but it's one of those super complex. It's probably, in my mind, one of the most complex games I have just by trying to look through the rule book, and I don't know if I'll ever acquire the mental inertia needed to actually sit down and play this game on my own. So why not maybe find some other first Minnesota guy that has played the game before and would be interested in kind of, you know, playing it through a session together. Fields of Fire, essentially, it's a World War II card game in that the locations that you'll be going through with your soldiers are cards that are laid out on the table instead of a typical, you know, hex-based board. And it's got a lot of depth to it. It's probably, I would like to think, you know, more on the very realistic side of the spectrum when it comes to tactical war games. They really try to, from my brief read-through of the rules, incorporate a lot of, like, the lines of communication aspect that was important for combat even back during World War II. So a game that has caught my attention, I own. Haven't played, but maybe we'll be able to convince someone at the Mogul's Con to play with me. Might have to offer some sort of reward to get someone to teach me, but Fields of Fire is my next game.
I really do want to see you play a solitaire game at a convention, Nick. That'd be funny.
I've already decided I'm going to bring several because I'm one of those people that, you know, it's like, that's what I love about the board gaming community too, is like, that's something that I think is socially acceptable. Like someone's playing off in the corner. Like,
yeah, you're right. It wouldn't be that weird.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of go, well, okay. Wouldn't be the choice I'd make, but whatever.
Now, see, if you monopolize like four tables with four different solo games that you're playing all at the same time, that might be a problem, but
I won't be allowed to Mogul's Con 2025.
All right, so I'm going to talk about my last war game on my list, and it's not really a war game. I'd say it's more of a historical game. This is Three Kingdoms Redux, and this is by designers Yo Kang Long, Christina Zhen Wei, and it's published by, it says Starting Player, but I think Capstone did a print of this as well. So Three Kingdoms Redux is about the tripartite between the states of Wei, Wu, and Shu. You assume the role of one of those lords. So you have several lords at that time that are leading those states. And it's a bit asymmetrical. And our friend Steve online, he also goes by Akado, has likened this to Misery Farms, but more thematic and a little more interesting. So, you know, three player game, I think this would be really awesome to table. I've been wanting to play it for years. So Three Kingdoms Redux.
Misery Farms being Agricola, Nick, in case you missed the reference there. I think most of our listeners got that one, but
not me.
Oh yeah. You know, it's Agricola is notorious. It's called Misery Farm because at the end of every round, you have a hard time getting resources and you have to feed your people every turn. So it's basically you spend three quarters of the game just trying to get yourself established so that you can just feed your workers without actually making any forward ground. And some people don't like it because it's painful and some people like it because it's painful. You brought up wooden ships and iron men earlier. I'm going to bring up steel ships and pirates this time around for my next choice. Steel ships of the shipping variety and pirates of the trade variety. I would like to play a big game of Container with my big set of Container while we're there. So I've got the big deluxe edition of Container with the 6-inch long resin ships and all the giant containers on there. This is a trading game, really, a trading and auction game where you're trying to produce containers, sell them for as much as you can, acquire the types that you need and get them shipped to an island for the maximum profit throughout the course of the game. To do that, you have to be able to kind of evaluate value, win auctions appropriately, sell things for more than they're worth. And, you know, it's a very interactive, very, very social game, and it's a lot of fun. So, again, this is one of those that the more you have playing, the better. And given that I'm kind of doubling down on very interactive, high player count games, containers seem like a no-brainer. That it just kind of has an epic presence just by itself. So that's the new version of Container. Love to play this one.
Yeah, it's a classic, but make sure to open up all your pieces before we get there, because I don't know if you've done it yet, but the original shipment, they prepackaged every single little container piece in a plastic bag.
I've played my set a bunch of times, so that is good, true. Good. Yes, that's 100% true. When I first got my set, they were all individually shrink-wrapped, but no, mine has been unwrapped and played a bunch of times.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a good game.
All right. I have another war game that I'd like to get to the table at MogulsCon, and that's Conflict of Heroes, I guess Awakening the Bear. And that's typically a two-player tactical war hex encounter war game with dice combat resolution. I think it's dice, actually. I'm not sure about that, but it's a unique system in that it you're using action points to activate your units, opposed to just I move, you move. And so you, depending on how many action points each player have, you might be able to do a couple moves at a time. And, you know, each different actions you do take different amount of action points. And so it's kind of cool system. But my real interest in playing is actually to learn the solo system, not surprisingly, based on my last game of Fields of Fire. So once again, I'm hoping maybe there is someone at MogulsCon that has familiarity with the solo system, because it's not overly complex. I think Fields of Fire is definitely a point above in terms of weight compared to the Conflicts of Heroes solo system. But from what I've gathered, the Conflicts of Heroes solo system is considered one of the better solitaire, at least tactical war game systems. And I'd love to finally learn it. But even I think playing the two-player, a competitive two-player game would be fun as well. So that's Conflict of Heroes from Academy Games.
All right, I'm going to round out my list here with some more 18XX, of course. So one 18XX that I'm super excited to play is 1894. 1894 is by designer Jan Kloos, and this is self-published right now and currently available on 18xx.games, which is where I played it for the first time. I didn't know half the rules in this game, but I was floored with how good it is. So this is a 18XX game in the vein of, I want to say, 1830, where, you know, it is full capitalization. You know, you float companies, you pick a par value to float them at. They have IPO shares, they have market shares, and so on and so forth. The cool core conceit to this game is that when you upgrade green cities, they turn into brown 00 cities. So you just completely destroy the map, and it is hilarious. So I am super excited to table this one and get to know it a lot better. I have a feeling that this is easily going to be a top 5 18XX game for me. And yeah, heck, it probably already is just after my one play. So really love this phenomenal design and really excited to explore it more.
I will continue the trend of springboarding off your choices and give you my second 18XX choice. So honestly, I'm up for playing a lot of different 18XXs. Probably not any that are super long, but having said that, there are probably some exceptions. But as I was thinking of one that's somewhat shorter and still really fun and maybe not everybody has played, I would like to play a round of 18SJ, Railways in the Frozen North by Orjan Wenman. It's kind of a little more, you know, not quite as long game, kind of an evening length game, I would call it, where you're played in the United Kingdoms of Sweden and Norway. You've got public corporations and nationalizations. You've got route building bonuses. You've got crazy privates in there. And it's a really fun, I've really enjoyed playing that game a lot. And, you know, it's something that isn't just kind of a vanilla 18XX, has something interesting to it, yet doesn't take all afternoon either. So that is 18SJ, Railways of the Frozen North. As a secondary caveat, there's part of me that actually wants to try tabling 1899 as well. I don't know. I might just suck it up and do that one. 1899 is one of those weird Japanese releases that never made its way over here that I found a translated print and play files to and handmade print and played a copy of it. It might be a simulation more than a game, but this might be the only chance people get a chance to play something like this. So that cons are kind of a cool spot to make that one. So part of me wants to whip my bespoke copy of 1899 out and give that a whirl as well. So one of those two will happen.
If it's weird, I'm in.
Oh, this one's weird. This one's, you know, there's like five public companies and they all like nationalize together into Japan Rails North and Japan Rails West and whatever. And they all have like different powers to them. And they like it forms a Voltron as you all the powers come together. So
sick.
Super weird.
All right. So I'll end off with a game that I will say is probably unlikely to get tabled at MogulsCon because it's pretty niche, but it's a game that I think is really cool and I think is definitely at more of a convention game, and that's called The Republic of Rome, which is like a 1991, 1992 Avalon Hill game. And I don't think it's the first semi-cooperative game, but it's probably one of the first relevant semi-co-op games, because in the game, each player is playing a senator of Rome, and there's only one winner of the game, which is, I think, the senator with the highest popularity. But you also are senators of Rome, and you have to protect Rome from invading hordes of the barbarians, and you're prosecuting wars. And there's each senator is a senator family. So you have several characters that you're managing, and you're trying to get your characters elected to the different positions. So there's like this popularity contest, but also you all collectively have to make sure you're managing your resources collectively efficiently to make sure you're taking care of then these wars that you're dealing with every round. And if Rome falls, everyone loses. So, and then there's like, you know, all these different event cards that you can play, such as trying to assassinate other senators, of course, and that sort of thing. Anyway, I think it's a really cool system and a game that probably fallen off the leaderboard over the years, but I still think it's a game that I hope to play more in my lifetime, since it's a system that I've not really seen reproduced elsewhere. Maybe more on the fiddly side, because it is an Avalon Hill game, and those games tend to have a lot of clunky rules to them. But anyway, that's The Republic of Rome from Avalon Hill.
Yeah, I played the American, I guess, political system version of this by Rick Helly. I believe it was Founding Fathers.
Oh, okay.
That was pretty interesting. And then I know that these games were a huge influence to Cole Worley on John Company as well. So, yeah, you might be able to find some takers. Hopefully you do. Okay, so my last, I guess, set of games here, I'm going to just lump together Magna Graecia and also Castello Mathoni, which are both by Leo Colavini. So I know Colavini has become a little bit popular in certain niche circles over the past few years. I think Bridges of Shangri-La has picked up some steam in popularity as well, which is probably his classic design that some people know. Castello Mathoni is a different story. This one is re-implements Masons from several years ago with better art and components. And this is kind of like an area enclosure game that it looks pretty abstract in nature, actually, but pretty simple to play and learn. So hopefully this is something that we can table pretty quickly. Looks like it plays well at 5 as well. And then Magna Graecia looks super cool to me, actually. So this one has a lot of weird looking stuff in it, and it kind of reminds me of like a train game. So it's got basically route building, and I can see some resources and some cubes on here. And I don't know, maybe you could consider it cube rails. Maybe. So, but this game looks super cool, and it is high on my list. So I have a copy of this, and I really want to play Magna Graecia as well as Castello Mathoni.
All right, I got one last full selection, and then I got a few runners up that I just want to list as well without necessarily talking about them. The high point of my MogulsCon 5 years ago when we did this was actually a 5-player game of Le Havre that we did on Saturday afternoon. And it was very high level play with a bunch of people that knew how to play it. And it was really, really fun to play with experienced Le Havre players and so forth. It's in my top 3 games of all time. You got to go a weekend and actually play your favorites too, right? And that's one that's not necessarily I got to try it. It's that this is my favorite game. A gaming weekend is not complete without playing that one. So I desperately would like to play a game of Le Havre over the course of the weekend with 3 or 4 other people. I know I'll get takers on that one since that's widely considered to be one of Uwe Rosenberg's best games. My runners up, we don't quite have time to talk to them, but I want to list them anyway. Indonesia. I've always meant to make a giant con version of that game and haven't gotten around to it yet, but I still want to play it. That's great for a con game. I would like to play a scenario of Snowdonia, maybe a weird one, like the King Arthur version of Snowdonia or something like that. Snowdonia is a train game, but there's dozens of weird scenarios for it. I would like to try playing Imperial Steam just because I haven't played it yet and I'm interested in playing it. I would like to play Seoul Last Days of a Star, because it's been my favorite game this year, and I think there's a lot of interest in it, and I can teach it well, and it's going to go over well at a high player count. And finally, lastly, I would like to play a late night game of Ready, Set, Bet, just because it's a dumb racing game with an app that drives it, and it's just a lot of fun. So that's sort of my closeout of that list. Do you guys have any other honorable mentions you want to just quick run by and just plonk on there while you got the moment?
One additional game I'll throw out is Thief France, which is kind of a, I'd say, war game in that each player, it's similar to actually the Republic of Rome, and where each player is, I guess there's really no semi-co-op, it's completely competitive, but you might try to make allies in the game. So it's kind of got that 4X feel, and it's a game that I think you typically would want 5 to 6 players, you're managing, you know, armies and trying to capture territories while also trying to get your noble family members elected to the various positions of the papacy. And I forget a king, I think, is one of the different positions, and you get victory points. It's just seems like a cool system. Also by Academy Games, who did a, you know, Conflict of Heroes. So that's one other game I'll throw out. Honorable mention, I guess. So,
Mark, you brought up a game by a company that I probably should have mentioned some games from in this episode, and that's Splatterspielen. And The Great Zimbabwe is a classic. I love this game, and I would be happy to table that. I think what you brought up as well with Indonesia, I did play that once this past year, and that game is just a wild mess, and it was a blast. So both of those for sure, honorable mention, and wouldn't say no to either one. Horseless Carriage, actually, also their newest, is a really fun game. So definitely one of those would be good. And then, you know, there are a lot of war games and historical games that fill the con niche as well, or are just, you know, pretty damn fun to play, right? Like Maria, classic 3-player war game, super unique card mechanisms, always fun to play and teach. Pax Ren by Matt Eklund, great game. Always fun. Lots of people that enjoy that one. Coin, you'll probably see some coin games there, right? Fire in the Lake, some of these other bigger ones. You know, the list goes on and on. Oh, Brotherhood and Unity, man, great honorable mention. Alan Carlson, you know, our friend, is actually mentioned as a historical consultant in the game, and you know, this game is just a blast. It's about the Balkans conflict in Bosnia and Serbia in the 90s. And it is probably the best rendition of the Paths of Glory engine that I've ever seen. So anyway, I think I just listed enough games to fill an entire week of gaming.
Yeah, another thing I want to call out, I'm actually going to bring my entire collection of Oink games. I've got about 40 Oink games, including a lot of like hard to find ones. So if you got some fillers and you want to learn an Oink game, seek me out. I'm always happy to teach Oink games. So that's another little random opportunity that's out there for y'all. So anyway, yeah. Whew. Can we stretch this out to a week? This needs to be awesome. A week long. Oh, holy crap.
I just need to retire.
I know. So what you think about it, right? I mean, I have a fantasy in the future where we have board gaming retirement communities that instead of playing bingo, we play Dungeons and Dragons and we play war games and we play, we play board games all, we get together for a brass night or something like that. And is that going to be our retirement future? I think it is. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
That sounds really fun. I want to buy like a commune with all my gaming buddies and retire there and just play board games.
Yep.
It from our wheelchairs. That sounds amazing.
So in.
Ah, no kidding. Nick, let me give you one last shot to promote yourself here as we wrap up. Go ahead and promote your YouTube channel and anything else you want to.
Yeah, thanks again, Mark and Sobey, for having me on this episode. Hope to do it again sometime. And once again, I'm Nick from Talking Cardboard. And again, we're a group of content creators based in the Twin Cities area. A few other members, John, Corey, and Ryan and Jerch are other members. So we have a team of guys that like to make videos on YouTube and on TikTok's X. So check us out, Talking Cardboard on YouTube. Hopefully we show up if you search that, and definitely check out our content. We also try to show up at events. I've been trying my best to show up to a lot of the, MogulsCon, for example, and then a lot of the board game markets. I'll set up a table with my poster for Talking Cardboard. So you might see us around at events and Con of the North. We plan to have a room again like we did last year, where I'm hoping to bring in a lot of local board game publishers, since we have so many great publishers in the Twin Cities area. So I love to, get them as much FaceTime as possible, because I think a lot of people that are in the board game hobby in the area don't quite understand how many great publishers we have that are physically located here. So yeah, Talking Cardboard, check us out.
That's amazing. Nick, it's been awesome having you on, and we will absolutely have you back on in the near future. So thank you so much. This was super fun, and I heard about a bunch of games I've never heard of before tonight. So that was great.
Likewise, I agree. I learned a lot too.
Awesome. Well, hey, that wraps things up for tonight. Look forward to, 2 episodes in like 2 weeks. This is amazing. Go us. For the Gaming Moguls, I'm Mark.
And I'm Sobey.
And he's Nick. Good night, everybody.
This has been the Gaming Moguls Podcast. Please find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Feel free to join our Board Game Geek Guild, Guild number 3431. Find us on Instagram and Twitter, @GamingMoguls. Or reach us via email, jake@gamingmoguls.com or mark@gamingmoguls.com. If you like the Gaming Moguls podcast, please tell a friend. Thanks for listening.